CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Another matter that comes before the Supreme Court for oral arguments, decision mid-year, student loans. The Supreme Court expanded, goes the report at Bloomberg, a planned showdown over President Joe Biden's student loan relief plan, saying it will hear arguments from two borrowers who contend they are being unfairly excluded from the full scope of the program. The court was already going forward with this for arguments to be heard from six Republican-led states, saying the president, quote, lacked authority to issue the sweeping plan. However, these two new individuals, American citizens, Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor, have complaints that are not universal, but certainly understandable. Myra Brown complains she's out of the relief program because her loans are commercial entities. Alexander Taylor says that he's eligible for $10,000 in relief, but not the $20,000 he would get if he'd received a Pell Grant. Richard, thank you again to help me understand why the court wants to take this up, because, again, it strikes me this is all legislative executive branch.
No, I think here the difference is really quite apparent. With respect to immigration, it is widely understood that there is no judicial management that works, and there's no way that you could pass a statute that says immigration shall hereby no longer be a problem for the United States. And so it has always been for the political branches of government to try to sort this thing out as best it can, with the occasional judicial intervention because of equal protection of the law concern or something of the sort. But with the student loan program, the argument here is that the president does not have the power by an executive order to basically commit the United States to loan forgiveness programs, which could easily total a half a trillion, maybe $1 trillion. And what has to happen is, since the program is illegal, there must be somebody in the United States who's in a position to say, you cannot do something which is unconstitutional. And it is just untenable to say, the political branches of government are entitled to have the last word on what they do, as whether it's constitutional or not. The entire fabric of American law has always been that statements that or actions by the Congress that are ultra-virus, that are beyond its power, actions by the presidents which are beyond his delegated power, and can be stopped. And so, for example, if you go back to the old seizure cases, what Harry Truman did was to issue an order opening the mines up against his will. He did that through his attorney, Secretary of Commerce, Mr. Sawyer. And what the Supreme Court said is, you know, we looked at this stuff. Turns out the president doesn't have the power as commander-in-chief to do this. The president doesn't have the power under any known statute to do this, including those dealing with labor relationships. Since he has no power to do this stuff, the order is void and we stop it. That's the kind of issue that we're facing here. And this is perfectly appropriate for judicial situations. The question is, how do you set the problem up? In any rational constitutional system, including those which are used by the states and including those that are used in England and those that were used even in ancient Rome, if in fact you have a claim that the government has gone beyond its constitutional powers, this is not a claim that the government has made the wrong choice within its constitutional powers, which is a very different kind of problem, much more fact-intensive, then on these issues, any citizen or any taxpayer, it doesn't matter which, is entitled to enjoin the program. And that was a rule which was rejected in a case called Frothingham and Mellon, another case called Massachusetts and Mellon, when it turned out people wanted to say, rightly I think they were, that the Maternity Act of 1920 or 21, which was designed to give aid to mothers who had recently given birth to children, was not something that could be done under the federal Constitution, because when it referred to the general welfare of the United States, it meant the provision of various kinds of collective goods, national security, defense, public improvements, and so forth. And it wasn't meant to include transfer payments from the Treasury to a particular subclass of women. That claim, I think, would have won, but they said, there's no standing to bring it. So now you see what the problem is. If you don't have some way to get around taxpayer standing and citizenship standing, both of which now lose, then a program of momentous proportion, which is illegal and unconstitutional, will survive. And the Supreme Court doesn't want to do that. So there are two roads that it could take. One is it could overrule the rule, which I've supported for years, and to say if you're challenging something as being beyond the scope of the power of the government to do, any citizen or any taxpayer is in a position to bring that suit, and then you coordinate different suits which raise that same issue. That they're not going to do, I suspect. So what they're doing is they're now engaged in an activity, in quotation marks, finding standing by somebody. And so this lawsuit, what you do is you have two people saying, one, I got a commercial loan, and I'm not forgiven. And somebody else says the other thing, says that I got the only $10,000, I was entitled to $20,000. The problem about these suits is that they're very oblique. And so to the first suit, we say, yes, you're absolutely right. And what the Biden administration has to do is to expand the program to give loan forgiveness to anybody who has a commercial loan.
That's how we go from half a trillion to a trillion.
That's kind of crazy. Or they're going to say, look, if you don't give it to us, we're dog in the mangers, you can't give it to the other side. The standing question doesn't resolve that. And the same thing with respect to the Pell Grant. Somebody could come and say, I have standing to challenge the fact that I'm shortchanged. But the only relief that they're entitled to get under that kind of theory is an extra $10,000, and the program can't be challenged. And so there are other people who are trying to raise other challenges. You can never quite figure out what they're about. They're all basically contrivances of one kind or another. And the reason why the Supreme Court turns a blind eye to the contrivances is the alternative is you have two things. One, you could have a kind of a rickety standing case and then decide the case on the merits. Or the other thing, you could say, oh, it's only a $500 billion program. Let's everybody go home. And we don't have any way whatsoever to challenge the blatant illegality of the president of the United States. Now, normally you're supposed to look at standing first and the merits second, but everybody peeks behind the curtain. And you realize that this is a program which they're trying to justify as a COVID relief program. And there are so many serious objections to it. It's really very difficult to start to keep count of them. And the more it is that they understand that this program is an enormous deviation from acceptable standards, the more likely they are to cheat on the standing question. So the standing doctrine has become a legal morass. I would say, having litigated a fair bit myself, you find in one case out of every three or four cases, somebody's going to raise some kind of a standing issue. Sometimes they're preposterous. Sometimes they're really quite important. And yet the Supreme Court doesn't want to make the correct fix. So I think it's going to get it. And then you have the following irony, right? Why is it we justify this program? Well, of course, it's COVID. And that's crazy because you're putting the program in place long after the COVID thing has peaked.
They're justifying student loans on COVID or the
title? Yeah, that's a response to emergencies.
Well, that's what COVID, they're using. That's what they're using for the border.
Yes, well, it's all purpose, right?
Well,
and of course, it's not really a COVID crisis anymore. If anything, it's much more a vaccine crisis than a COVID crisis or a cancer crisis or a life expectancy crisis. But the number of deaths that come from the particular disease, given that the variations that are still alive and well out there tend to be very minor, are modest. So it's a complete transparency. And when they've had forgiveness programs, you've never forgiven the whole loan. What you've done is you've basically said, you're basically allowed to postpone for a month the payment of some of these things, or you're forgiven a month or 2 months. There's never been a case of a forgiveness program, which is essentially a complete wiping out of the debt. And it's like a huge appropriation that is being made by the president of the United States when all appropriation bills have to originate.
All right. It's time to vote, Richard. Let's vote for the student loan hearing. That will have six states plus these two American citizens.
My answer is somebody will be found to have standing. You don't want to have to read the article. What you want to do is to hold your nose. But they'll do it.
And the court.
And on the merits, it will probably be six, sure to strike it down, two, maybe not, Ms. Sotomayor and Ms. Jackson. And Kagan, she has different instincts. She's actually running university, dean and so forth. I can't tell which way she's going to go. I think that she has tendencies in both directions. But I don't think this thing will survive. And frankly, I don't think that the Biden administration cares that much.
Right.
It was a huge boon to it. It thought, and they were probably right during the election, to turn out students who thought they were going to get a lot of free goodies. And now if it turns out that the court doesn't allow this to happen,
they can blame
it doesn't undo the results of the 2022 elections where the Democrats
fared
far better
than we expected. So the court is playing the role of fall guy for a political story. Richard Epstein, Hoover Institution Senior Fellow. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.